Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Golf Talk Live. I'm your host, Ted Oderico. Welcome back this April 17th, the week after the Masters Tournament, to Golf Talk Live. I appreciate everybody tuning in tonight. We've got a great show for you. I've got three coaches coming on here for the Coach's Corner segment. I'll bring them out here in just a minute, but let me just remind everybody, of course, this broadcast is live on blogtalkradio.com from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Central Standard Time. Joining me a little bit later in the broadcast is going to be my special guest, Mr. Jeffrey Passage, CPA extraordinary. He's here to talk about golf and taxes, and you got to be sure to stick around. It's going to be a great interview with Jeff. But in the meantime, let me bring out the Coach's Corner panel for tonight, and then we'll get right into our questions. Returning back on the Coach's Corner panel, of course, is Mr. Stan Moore, PGA Teacher Professional, and Stan works with the Don Law Academy down in Boca Raton, Florida. And if you want to get a little bit more information about Stan, you can visit his website at www.BocaRatonGolfLesson.com. Joining us for the first time tonight is Scott Millman, Master Teacher Professional and the owner and president of the Simple World of Golf. And he's also the co-owner, founder at the Millman NRG Foundation. And he's joining us on the Coach's Corner panel first time tonight. And Scott's going to be joining us in a couple of months, actually, I believe, for a one-on-one interview with me to talk about his foundation and just some great golf conversation. And he's got a couple of websites here at www.thesimpleworldofgolf.com and also the foundation website at www.norestrictionsgolf.org. So make sure that you check those out after the show. And my third panelist, of course, tonight was going to be Scott Nye, the Director of Instruction and Professional Golfer, and the CEO and president of Tourbound Golf, Inc., but unfortunately he wasn't able to make it this evening. And substituting for him tonight is going to be Jeff Shaw, and he is a PGA teacher professional at the Tourbound Golf Academy out in Seattle, and he's also an Aimpoint senior instructor. Gentlemen, welcome to Golf Talk Live's Coach's Corner.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ted.
Thanks.
All right, and just let me... No, great. Thanks, guys. Let me just back up one quick second. I apologize. I forgot, Jeff. If you want to get more information on Tourbound, you can visit their website at www.tourboundgolfacademy.com. All right, guys. Normally how I start off the panel, I'm just going to quickly read something out here just for the listening audience. Stan, I know you're familiar with this, so just hang tight, guys. We'll get right into some of the questions. Of course, every Thursday night, you'll have an opportunity to either email or you can call into the program if you want and pick the brains of some of the best coaches and teaching professionals in the business. Each week we'll have, of course, a different panel, and we're going to cover a new topic each week, plus help some of you weekend warriors out there as well. So you can certainly call in during the live broadcast if you want, or you can email your questions. I've already got some questions lined up from some of you that emailed me in last week. And here's essentially how the segment's going to work for tonight. Each week I'll pose questions to the panel for some discussion. Of course, we'll start off the discussion and then rotate around to each of the members for some general comments and then open the floor to some additional comments. If you want to call in, and this Coach's Corner segment, of course, will go from 6 p.m. Start time and we'll close off about roughly 7 p.m. before I bring on my guest later this evening. If you want to call into the program, you can do so at area code 646-716-4667, or you can email your questions at questions.golftalklive@gmail.com. Okay, gentlemen, the topic of tonight that I wanted to start off, the general topic, was sent in by Stan from St. Louis, Missouri. And I thought, even though it's not pertinent to the Masters this week, Masters, of course, was last week, and congratulations to Bubba Watson again for being a second-time winner. But Stan wrote in, and he had a general question here about nerves. And he's getting ready to play in a corporate event. It doesn't indicate when it is, so I don't know if it's in the next couple of weeks or a couple of months, but his question generally is, how do you prepare for a corporate event? And he goes on further to say he's going to be playing in a company tournament, but he's a little nervous, of course, since he hasn't played a lot, and doesn't want to look bad in front of the boss and fellow coworkers. So he's asking generally of the panel, can you offer some tips to prepare himself? So I'd like to approach this, guys, if we can, from two different ways. Because really there's a couple of ways of answering this. If he's playing in, say, in 2 weeks' time as opposed to maybe a couple of months, obviously he's going to change up his game plan a little bit differently. So, Stan, I'm going to start you off since you've been on the panel before to answer that. Let's assume that Stan here is, who bears your name as well, is going to be playing in a couple of weeks. How would Stan prepare for that corporate event?
Well, I think the first thing is to go out there and have fun with the idea and realize that probably in this corporate event that the people that he is playing with are probably not any more better than he is.
Right.
And in some cases, he might even be better than they are. So don't set your expectations too high. Just go have fun with it, relax, and I think go into it and sing a song to yourself while you're out there before you're around. Go talk to people. I think introducing yourself to people there in that tournament and getting to know those that are participating, especially the ones you're actually going to be playing with, is create
right.
conversations and warm up to them and get more comfortable around them just in conversation, first of all, and I think that will help in relaxing him. So that's one of the first things I would do.
Very, very well put. And that's a great icebreaker, too. I think, obviously, you want to get the, obviously, he's going to know, I'm sure, quite a few of the people at the corporate event, but if there's multiple offices, especially from other states and things that are participating, I don't know how large the event is, but there may be a lot of individuals that he may not be that familiar with and maybe not have worked with. And, if he happens to get placed in a group where he's not too familiar with some of them, that is a great way to sort of break the ice. And they obviously have some things in common because they're working for the same company. Scott, I want to move on to you for a second here, but I want you to look at it a little bit differently. Again, going on the same assumption that Stan is going to be playing this corporate event in a couple of weeks as opposed to a few months, what are some tips that you would give him to maybe warm up and prepare for it from a physical standpoint? I'm talking about playing the game or, should he be going out and playing as much golf or should he be maybe focusing more on some range time? What would you suggest?
Well, I think with a couple of weeks, a couple of weeks out before the event, and not knowing where he is with his ball striking, I think focusing on his short game definitely, to spend some time on the putting green, and really honing those skills and kind of working his way back is for one. Part of it is if he's only relegated to range time, like our courses up in Michigan still aren't even open, but maybe getting
right.
on the range and playing some holes mentally, picking one of his favorite courses and going mm-hmm. through his pre- and post-shot routines and actually, hitting the clubs that he was hit on those holes and playing some holes mentally out on the range if he's available, if he can do that. Are some really good ways to start getting him prepared. Obviously, nerves, for all of us, from the pros on down, feel nerves. And I think when he gets to his event, the thing to focus on is to really lower the expectations, like Stan said, and focus on, his routine and the process and not really worry about the outcome of the day or how he's going to look and focus on his own game.
Some great advice as well. And Jeff, before I move on to you, I just want to add even just a little further twist. Obviously, Stan's indicated he doesn't play a lot, so he's probably not, I would hazard a guess, that he's probably not comfortable with his driver. Would it maybe be smart, if he's not a great ball striker, to maybe back off the driver and maybe hit for his tee shots on some of the longer holes, maybe with either a fairway wood or even maybe go with a hybrid or some other selection? just to sort of get him into, make sure he stays more in play. Is that maybe a good way to attack this as well, you think, Jeff? Go ahead.
Absolutely. If you're nervous in a tournament like that, that's the last thing you want to hit as a driver. What I try to do is before a tournament is at any level is work on my breathing. I worked with Dr. Mm-hmm. David Wright for a lot of years, who's a sports psychologist and PGA pro in Southern California, and he's worked with a zillion tour pros, and that was one of the main things he worked on me with was my breathing. Your breathing slows down your heart rate, and that's something you can do without even picking up a club.
Yeah, there's so many aspects. I mean, obviously, you know, with limited information that we're getting from some of the respondents here, we obviously have to go under certain assumptions now, and that's a great point. You know, obviously when you're nervous, you become tense and things like that. So, you know, doing some deep breathing and that, you know, while you're out there sort of preparing for the day is a great way to certainly help relax you and get the blood flowing and so forth. But I want to now attack it from the other way. Now let's go into the assumption that Stan has a little bit more time to prepare for this tournament. And I'm going to switch up the rotation here. Scott, I'm going to go back with you, and then we'll go to Stan, and then I'll go back to Jeff, and then Stan will cap off with you last. Let's just assume now he's got, you know, 2 or 3 months before his corporate event. What would be a different strategy that maybe we would want to attack? Is this maybe a time where he would want to connect with the Teachboro and maybe get a few lessons here just to sort of tune up his game a little bit? Is that maybe a direction he should go at that point, Scott?
You know, I think a couple of 2-3 months out, you're not going to make too many changes to his swing. At least I wouldn't. You're at the point now where you're kind of fine-tuning, you know, maybe the course that he's going to play, if he can get out on that course a number of times and become very familiar with it. Maybe the course sets up well for a draw, so maybe he goes back to the range, either with his instructor or on his own, and he's working on specific shots that he needs to hit to play that course effectively. Maybe he's got lots of bunkers that he knows he's going to encounter. Maybe it's time, you know, in the bunker working on that aspect of his game. So, you know, 2 to 3 months out when I start to prepare my students, we're kind of looking at, you know, what the course is going to call for in terms of shot making. You know, if it's a tight course, maybe the driver gets put in the bag and we're teeing off and, you know, long irons. So there's a number of different ways we can attack it, but it's certainly not going to be the approach of, you know, you're really working hard on the swing. We're going to be doing some fine-tuning and really preparing for the tournament itself.
Right, and that's a great point. And you know, certainly you don't want to be reinventing the wheel a couple of months out from an event like that and make matters worse. But Jeff, let's add this into the mix, if we will. And you know, Scott certainly touched on a lot of points there. But if we don't want to obviously change things up too much, maybe working on Stan's course management and as Scott has suggested, you know, preparing for what he's going to be facing is maybe a better approach. And then after that event, you know, then obviously based on the results, Stan would certainly want to connect with a coach or somebody and then sort of reinvent the wheel, if you will. But is it a better approach maybe just to work on, as Scott has suggested, you know, instead of getting to all the fundamentals and things like that, just talking about the conditions he's going to be playing in and helping him mentally prepare to handle those conditions? Is that a better way to go, do you think, Jeff?
Well, I think it could be okay. I used to think that until I recently purchased my Robo Golf Pro, which is a robotic swing trainer, which makes you swing any way I want you to swing. So we can get people on that a week or two, even less time out than that, and get them on the robot and feel the perfect swing and have them just do hundreds and hundreds of reps. And that's going to give them the confidence to go into a tournament and just repeat that swing and not have a lot of extra swing thoughts and just go have fun and just trust that swing because they know it's perfect because the robot told them it's perfect.
Right, right. Good point as well. And Stan, I'm going to round you out on the final here. How would you, a couple of months out, how would you handle our respondent here, Stan?
Well, I think going to a teaching pro would be a good thing to do. But when you go to the teaching pro, you tell them exactly why you're coming there, that you're preparing for this tournament. And you don't need an overhaul in your swing. And from a teaching perspective, it might be just working on tightening up things like working on a good pre-shot routine. You know, does he have one, first of all? So I think checking to make sure he's got a good pre-shot routine, making sure he's working on his alignment, that that's shored up, his weight is distributed correctly, and then getting into things like a lot of short game stuff, putting drills, working on speed especially. So working on speed drills, little short chips and pitches, I think would be advantageous to him.
Yeah, and I agree. I obviously agree with everything that the panel has said, and I think that working, you know, if you're going to spend time on something, the short game is probably the best area if you are going to spend your time, you know, given the time frame that you're working with. You know, certainly, as Jeff had indicated, if you have the technology available with the RoboGolf Pro as an example, you know, certainly you can get on there and within a very short few sessions can certainly, you know, make the adjustments needed. But obviously if somebody's not in that position that doesn't have that accessibility, it can be a little bit more difficult. But, you know, the main thing that I would say to Stan or individual who sent the question in is Stan, you had indicated in the very first comment was really just to go out and have fun. Not to put that added pressure onto you to have high expectations and just really go out, have fun and enjoy yourself. If this is, especially if this is the first corporate event, you know, I think Jeff had also indicated too that there's going to be others out there that are certainly not going to be as good, and you're going to be in good company there. But you know, you want to go out, have fun, enjoy the day, and not worry about where the ball is going all the time. You're just really there to have a good time with your coworkers and other business associates. So just, Stan, if you're tuning in tonight, just go and have a good time and you know, practice some of the tips that were given to you tonight. And, guys, before we move on to some other questions here, I just want to very quickly read out something, if I may, just to remind everybody here, of course, that we're live on Golf Talk Live Radio here on blogtalkradio.com. And if you want to questions, you can do so at questions.golftalklive@gmail.com, or you can call into the program at area code 646-716-4667. Don't forget to follow the show on social media at facebook.com/golftalkliveblog, and you can also follow me on Twitter at tedandbuckceo, and don't forget to check out the Golf Talk Live website at golftalkliveblog.com. Okay, I'm going to roll into our first questions here from some of the emailers that we got last week. And the first one here, I had a little bit of a chuckle out of this, is Randy from Washington, and in parentheses beside it, he's put the other one. So I'm assuming he's not from Washington, D.C., and decided to throw a little humor in there. He indicates he's an avid golfer, guesses about a 20 handicap, and where his trouble is lying is he's having trouble judging his speed when putting out of the fringe around the green. Wants to know if you have any tips to help him gauge his speed. Jeff, I'm going to start with you, if that's okay. What are some tips that we could give Randy here to help with his putting?
Maybe not use the putter. Maybe practice with a hybrid. Maybe take a sand wedge out and blade it. You know, try some different shots if he's having trouble with that. What I always like to do is maybe 10, 15 feet out, make a box with a string, about a foot rectangle box, and practice my speed and get it inside of that box. I mean, obviously, you're going to have to hit it harder, but just getting the feel of how much harder you need to do on a 10-footer, on a 20-footer, on a 30-footer out of the fringe. And then, you know, which way the grain, if there's grain, if he's putting against the grain, then that's obviously going to slow it down. So he's got to take that into consideration, different things like that. But, you know, try some different shots. You see the guys on tour, they don't always use the putter.
Right.
You've seen Tiger with the hybrid from, you know, it depends on how long the fringe is. It might be that first cut that might be all the way down the hill. There might not be a second cut. So that fringe might be pretty deep, but it's going to get the ball rolling end over end. A lot of times in the fringe when we use a putter, it tends to grab, so we need a little more loft. So, or you know what Trevino used to do? He used to use a putting stroke with a 4-iron when he was just off the green. So, you know, try some different shots.
Yeah, and that's a great point. And I remember, I think Tiger's done this as well, but I remember Freddie Couples had used actually his three wood on a number of occasions, found
exactly.
It worked through a little bit better. So, yeah, and obviously, again, I realize that some of the questions coming in here are very general, and there's really a myriad of things, but we want to be able to try and give them some alternatives and some other options along the way. And Scott, if you wouldn't mind, in addition to what Jeff's just given, is there anything else that you can think of that that you would suggest for Randy?
You know what? I think Jeff did a really good job covering that. I think he's right. I think, if you're struggling with the putter out of the fringe, and obviously we're making some assumptions on the conditions in which he's playing in, and distance control may be an option. And, if distance control is an option, I would recommend just getting out in the middle of the green, picking a hole where he's got a fairly flat putt, maybe setting some, three different tees at maybe 20, 30, and 40 feet, and putting a club or the pin behind the hole a couple of feet and really working on his distance control. Chipping is probably the next best option depending on where he is in the fringe. I know a lot of courses, aren't cut really well and they've got higher fringes, and maybe the option is to chip instead, in which case, maybe we pick an area, a couple feet onto the green, and he experiments with different clubs, maybe an 8-iron, maybe a 7-iron, and he's chipping to different pins. But Jeff really hit it on the head, is that you've got to be creative and have some different options available to you. If you're struggling with one, try something else.
Right.
Yeah, great point as well, Scott. And Stan, if you want to round that out, if you had a student...
Well, they both covered it pretty well there, and I totally agree with Jeff. I'd be using a hybrid or a three-wood to come out of there. In grass like that, and that gives you a lot of different options. You'll get it out of that grass, it'll pop right out of there, and what I would encourage the gentleman to do is put some sticks out there or some rings and try to hit those within a 3-foot circle using that hybrid or 3-wood, and work towards that, and I think you'll be real good.
Yeah, I agree with all of all three suggestions, and I think that you all really hit on a valid point. There are a lot of options out there, and I think the average high handicapper tends to sort of fall back to what they're comfortable with, and that can be good at times. But sometimes you have to be willing to experiment a little bit and try, as Jeff had indicated, try some different clubs in different situations, and don't just assume just because you're near the green that you have to always use your putter. As he had indicated, we see on tour all the time, players like Tiger and others that have used other clubs, whether it be a hybrid or, and in the case of Lee Trevino, as he indicated, used a 4-iron out of the fringe. So you want to, Randy, you want to be able to experiment a little bit and not just always sort of stick with what traditionally is used in that area and experiment, but mainly have fun out there, and hopefully that'll help you. And we appreciate you for writing into the program. Our next one is from Tony in Ohio, and he starts off. He says, "My question is simple. Nobody likes to practice, but when we do, and his question, of course, is what are some suggestions for putting together a good practice session?" And Stan, I'm going to start back with you, if that's okay. We'll rotate it back again. If you had a student that came to you and said, "Look, I really hate practicing, but I know I've got to do it in order to keep my game fine-tuned," what were some things that you would suggest that Tony would do to put together a good practice session?
Well, first of all, two things. He needs to learn how to practice indoors without a golf ball, and then he needs to learn to practice outdoors with a golf ball. And I'm, from an outdoor standpoint, I'm one of those guys who believes you should do some block practice where you're pretty much in the same position hitting balls. I think one-third of your time should be with that. Then one-third of your time should be with random practice, and that's where the ball will have different lies, and you'll hit the ball from different lies to different targets. And then I think the last third of your practice should be games. Games should be a fun thing, and that's the games are really where you're going to develop your skill in hitting the ball. And then the big item for me is indoor practice, and that's where we remove the golf ball, and that's where the golfer can really concentrate the learning to understand the feel and what's going on with their body. And that's a great practice to do during the winter months when you can't get out and hit balls, is spend time indoors, gripping the club, making mini golf swings very slowly back and through. And you do that 15 to 20 minutes every day. That's going to really sharpen up your game. It's going to help you ingrain the feel that you need to understand the feelings that you need to hit the golf ball.
Right. Great points, Stan. Scott, your thoughts?
Well, it's a great question for me. I'm one of those guys that hates to practice, but I love to play games. And so usually when I'm on range, if we can create some kind of game during the winter, dome, it's shooting at targets, it's hitting different wedges, it may be trying to hit the same, you know, maybe four or five different clubs the exact same distance. We come up with any number of ways to break the monotony of just hitting balls, especially in the dome or even outside on the range. And so we come up with little competition, how high we can hit the ball, how low we can hit the ball, which, you know, can you move it left to right, right to left, change your shot shape, change your flight. So, you know, for somebody that doesn't like to practice right. like myself, especially when it's on range, we're changing it up all the time and have playing games. Around the green, we're throwing balls on the cart path, under trees, behind trees, in the pine shot. We pick the toughest shots that we can pick, and we go out and we figure out ways to play different types of shots. And it keeps us engaged, it keeps us interested, there's friendly competition, and it makes practice a whole lot fun, and you get to hone your game. I think it's a great way to practice, and we do the same thing with the putter. We pick, you know, putts from maybe off the green that normally you wouldn't use a putter, and you've got to, you know, have some creativity using your putter. Maybe you're hitting a shot out of the rough with the toe of your putter, and we're picking, you know, the worst downhill putt we can find, and we're trying to do it in the fewest number of strokes. And before you know it, you're really crafting a solid short game. And on course, maybe it's just going out with one club. You know, maybe you pick your four or five iron, and you learn to hit different types of shots in different types of situations. But take it from a guy that doesn't like to practice. We've done all that, and it really keeps my game sharp year-round.
Excellent point as well. Jeff, I want to just ask you before I allow you to respond to Tony's question here. You know, Scott raised some interesting points here about, you know, with club selection and you know, hitting at different distances and things like that. I think one of the things that I've noticed, you know, when I watch people on the range as a professional, and I see sort of the same repetitiveness all the time where, you know, they'll get up with their different clubs and you know, hit their full distances. I like Scott's approach here, and I think it's a smart one, because obviously when you're out in the golf course, you're going to be faced with different situations. I mean, you're not always going to have, you know, your 7-iron out to and hit a 150-yard shot. You might have to only hit it 130 or so, and it may be a shot where you need to use a 7 as opposed to an 8 or something, and so you've got to learn to be able to change it up, and I think that's a good idea. If you had a student that you were dealing with in this scenario, such as Tony, and you wanted to best advise him on making use of his time on the range, what would you suggest to him?
Well, I like everything that everybody said so far, because I love to practice. I'm not like the normal person. I could stay out under the lights till 11 o'clock at night and putt and not want to go home. I'd rather almost practice than I would play, because I like hitting all those different shots. If someone doesn't like to practice a lot, I would suggest don't stand out there for an hour and just grind away and not be happy.
Right.
Warm up with some short shots, and if you're not hitting a shot well, put it back in the bag. I would just as soon hit in front of a net, because I tend to get ball bound, as we all do, and when we yep. see the shape of the shot, we can get really discouraged, and that keeps people from wanting to practice. And that might be part of this guy's problem, is, you know, he's not right. seeing a lot of success. So hit into a net, you know, when he's at home and he's watching ESPN, put a club in your hand and practice your grip. stand there and practice your stance while you're looking at the TV so you don't even see what the ball is doing. And, you know, not put so much pressure on yourself to get better with the shape of the ball. And if it's not happening, just put the club back in the bag and, you know, walk away and go putt for a while. And like they said, play games, you know, make it fun. Because practice to me is fun. I do play a lot of games, you know, with a lot of, if I have other people down at the range, hey, let's go with this target. Let's go with that target.
Right.
And,
yeah,
make it fun.
I'm like you, Jeff. Yeah, I'm like you as well, Jeff. I mean, I could be out there until the sun starts to rise again, and I enjoy, you know, doing a lot of things like that. And you know, one of the things, too, that I notice a lot that I think that, you know, sometimes you'll get people out there that certainly are not making good use of their time, and they're out there for an hour or two, and they're just not, you know, you're not really seeing any results, and you kind of think to yourself, well, maybe it's time to move on and do something different, you know, because you're not really practicing with a purpose.
Right.
I think that's something that is very crucial for anybody, regardless of what skill level you are, is don't just go to the – and we've all seen this. I know we have, but, you know – so-and-so comes out with a bucket or two of balls and puts them down and just beats ball after ball after ball after ball and doesn't really have any sort of purpose on the range. And you need to, as Stan indicated in the beginning, you need to sort of break it up a little bit and spend a certain amount of time here and
a little bit
of time over here and do it out. And I think that's really the direction that a lot of people, and I would certainly suggest to Tony, is go there with a purpose. And as you indicated, Jeff, if you're not hitting a particular shot that great, put the club back in the bag and move on to something else. But have a purpose in mind, have a goal in mind as well. Just because you're not playing on a golf course that particular day, have a goal in mind. What's your objective for that particular range session? And make the best use of a certain amount of time, and when that time expires, get the heck off the range. Don't sit there,
even if
you're playing good.
Even if it's just 15 minutes,
exactly.
I'd rather have somebody practice, you know, really concentrating for 15 minutes than two buckets of balls and not really thinking about what they're doing. They're going to walk away and go, what did I just do? I didn't really work on anything. I just beat balls. And they're not going to really get anything from that.
Absolutely. You know, I tell a lot of my students, Ted, I tell a lot of my students, just go out and get a good 30-minute practice session as opposed to trying to go out for an hour or 2 hours just banging balls. Make something purposeful out of it.
And
you know,
I think it was Nicholas
what I often
that
do, would, sorry, go ahead, Jeff.
Well, I recall Nicholas, when he'd go out to practice, he could have balls sitting in front of him, and if he started hitting it the way he wanted to, he'd leave.
He wouldn't keep
grinding away. Hey, I'm good, I'm going to the movie or somewhere. He's going to do something else.
And that's true, and you're right, Jeff, that was Nicholas. I remember him saying that. But you know, here's something that I've often done. Of course, you know, I travel around quite a bit, and a lot of times if I'm visiting a you know, somebody else's course, I will, you know, kind of have a listen on the range, and you know, while I'm hitting some balls, and to prove my point is, you know, if I see somebody out there just sort of beating balls and not really with a sense of purpose, I'll sort of, you know, tweak an ear and kind of listen to the conversation a little bit, and more often than not, it's like, well, you know, he's, you know, talking to his friend there, and he's, well, I'm not hitting this, I'm not doing that, and of course, I don't want to interfere on somebody else's turf. So a lot of times, what I'll do, especially if I know the pro, is I'll go up to them and I'll say, "You see that guy out there? He needs help here," and try and set him up for a lesson. But what I'll often do is I'll listen to, and if somebody comes out and asks me, because they'll see me hitting balls, and they'll say, you know, obviously this guy can hit a golf ball, and I'll get people to wander up and start a conversation. And I'll certainly give a tip here and there, but I don't, as I said, I don't like to step on somebody else's turf when I'm visiting their facility. But often I'll listen to the conversation, and when I see somebody doing that and just beating ball after ball, and I hear them complaining about their game, you know, that's when that practice with a purpose sort of clicks into my mind, because obviously that individual's not doing that. They're just going out there, and they're hoping that by some way of osmosis or a miracle is going to happen, lightning's going to strike, I don't know what, but they're going to hit balls for the next 2 hours and hope that they're going to find their game, and it's just not going to happen. So I would say the number one thing is go to the range, practice with a purpose. Number two, if you don't already have one, I would suggest that you get connected with a good quality teacher professional in your area and get them to help you put something together. give some ideas, bounce some ideas off your head, take a lesson or two while you're there, of course, and get them to show you some great ways to make it interesting on the range and put together a practice session that you're going to have fun and enjoy it. And that's what I would suggest to Tony, is not to just go out there and beat ball after ball. Go out there and practice with a purpose. I want to move on to the next question because I don't want to spend any more time on that one. But I think we've covered everything, and hopefully Tony was listening. And I know if not live, he'll tune in later. But Don from Branson, Missouri, wrote in, and this was really a very interesting question. I want to pose this because it really targets the teacher profession side, and I think it's something that really needs to be addressed. So here's what Don from Branson, Missouri, had to say. He says, I play weekly in a group. We're all pretty much at the same skill level, anywhere ranging from a 15 to 20 handicaps. My friends and I are in a funk as far as our games go. Despite taking lessons, we don't seem to improve very much. Do you have any suggestions on how to kick it up a notch? So here's Don and his associate, his friends, his foursome, I guess. They've certainly gone to seek some professional help, but they're not seeing improvement. And as we all know, handicaps really have not fluctuated very much in the last at least decade, if not longer. I think one of the number one problems, and I may be wrong, and this is why I want to ask the panel, and Scott, I'm going to start off with you in here in a second, but let me just throw this out there. I think one of the biggest problems that I see, I don't care who you go to, I don't care what skill level they've got to or what equipment they're using, if you do not put into practice what that instructor or coach or mental coach is teaching you and showing you, you are not going to improve. Scott, do you want to continue on from that?
No, you just hit the nail on the head. I think you summed it up nicely. I think ultimately it's an instructor as I look at it, and you're right, it doesn't matter who you go to. If you're not ready to make the swing changes that we suggest or work on the mental aspects that we suggest or that we try and help you with, it really wouldn't matter if you went to Jeff, myself, Stan, Butch Harmon. You can go right down the line of all the great instructors that are out there. You've got to put the time in. And golf is one of those sports where, you know, you got to build the foundation, and then you add on to that, and there's pieces. And you work on one piece at a time, and you keep building. And, you know, if you're not improving, it may not be with the instructor. Maybe you need to look in the mirror and say, you know, what am I not doing? Or what do I need? And maybe convey that to an instructor. You may have a great relationship with your instructor, but maybe you're not conveying the information, or maybe you're not understanding the information the instructor is giving to you. But either way, you've kind of got to look at yourself and say, what do I need to do to improve, and how do I need to communicate that, and then how much time am I actually going to devote to my practice and to improving my game? And it doesn't matter what the aspect is, whether it's mental, whether it's physical. I think as an instructor, a lot of times, you know, I look at my students, and being PPI certified, you know, sometimes their body doesn't allow them to make the swing changes that need to be made, mm-hmm. and we've got to deal with that issue as well. And so there's a number of factors that go into it, but if you're not improving, then you've really got to look at yourself and say, hey, what do I need to do to get better?
Yeah, and that's an excellent point. And Stan, just to expand a little bit more on that, if you will, but before I have you chime in, you know, the reason why I say this, and it's not to certainly knock the industry. I think there's a lot of, and present company included, I think there's a lot of fantastic instructors out there, and I know that they're you know, number one in their game. But I think that there has to be more emphasis and understanding that whatever is being taught, whatever method, formula, what have you, instruction, that the student has to understand that if they're not going to put it into practice, as much as we don't want to lose business, there's no point in them coming and laying down their cash if they're not going to, because what's going to end up ultimately happening, and I'm kind of getting a little bit of vibe from this gentleman here, is, and I don't know all of the circumstances, but I'm hazarding a guess, they're obviously not seeing improvement. I'm willing to bet they're not spending a lot of practice time out there working on the instruction. You're getting a lot of disgruntled people as a result. And Stan, I think that we need to somehow tweak in the industry and get people back practicing more what it is that we're teaching them. Stan, if you want to add some comments.
Well, first of all, people don't practice. That's the issue right there, in my opinion. Don't practice. I don't know this gentleman, so I don't know. But, again, I don't know how many lessons the gentleman has taken. One thing I keep trying to imply to people when I'm giving them lessons, I tell them that they're learning to play a violin here. How long will it take you to learn to play this violin? Okay, you're not going to be playing Beethoven in five lessons. Okay, it's going to take a while to get down to Beethoven. And really, if you look at learning how to play a violin or a piano or a musical instrument and improving with those, it takes time to do that. So it's not a quick fix. And I always tell my students the success of their game lies within them, not me. I'm here to help them, coach them, guide them, offer advice to them, but they're the ones that have to put all of this into practice. And they have to take what I've given them, they have to go work at it and get better with it. But it's just not going to happen, a lesson and go away. They have to understand that practice is not before a round, that's warm up, but practice right. is between lessons, practice is between lessons and between rounds. And most people will do their practice as warm up before a round, or they'll come to their next lesson and that will be their practice time. Now, not everybody is that way, but a lot of that happens. So, I mean, I could go on all day about this subject here.
Right.
But that's kind of my feelings regarding this. Their success lies within them, not the instructor. Right. But they have to take what the instructor gives them and apply it. And if they do, they should get better, but it's going to take time. And, you know, Tiger Woods has changed his swing three times now, I guess. And every time it's taken him over 2 years to do it. So there's a guy making major changes, working at it 8 hours a day, and it takes over 2 years. The average individual doesn't put forth that time. So that should give them a perspective of how much time they need to work on their game to get better at it.
Right. Again, some excellent points there. And that, you know, Jeff, before I move on to you here, you know, let me just add, it as both Stan and Scott and, of course, myself have indicated, if you're not willing to put in the practice, you're not going to reap the rewards. And I think that the number one problem with a lot of, especially high handicappers out there, and Don, I'm not trying to suggest that you're this way, but I think a lot of times they put unrealistic expectations on the lessons. They're assuming, you know, as you indicated, Stan, you know, learning to play the violin, that they're going to, you know, the first lesson or two lessons that, or even five lessons, that they're going to be playing Mozart or Beethoven. And it's just not going to happen. It's not realistic. And I think people, again, much like I mentioned earlier about the range sessions that and practice sessions, that they need to go in there with a purpose, what it is that they want to accomplish, and they need to articulate that to the person that's giving them the lessons and that they're working with. And I think that that's what a lot of people sort of seem to miss the boat on. And Jeff, I want you to expand a little bit more on, because I know that you're working with a great tool that helps people find their game. And so talk a little bit about that, if you wouldn't mind.
I love this question, because I used to think that people wouldn't change. In fact, Jim Petrolia, who's one of the foremost teachers in Southern California, he told me 25 years ago, he goes, Jeff, you can't change people. Well, we have a tool now that can and does change people. I was doing an aimpoint clinic at La Costa about a year ago, and Scott Nye, who owns Tourbound Golf Academy and Robo Golf Pro, who teaches at Pebble Beach Golf Academy on the robot, he had a robot there, and he put me on it for 28 swings, and I proceeded to hit the world's most perfect 7-iron, which has not come down yet, and this was almost a year ago. And right then I said, I need to buy one of these machines, and it's a $150,000 robotic swing trainer, and we can literally make people swing the way we want them to swing. And if you do an hour on the robot, it could be months of practice on your own. because I never used to believe in muscle memory, because when we go practice at any level, we're putting in bad muscle memory. We might have a couple shots that are the way we want it and the swing is the way we want it, but most of the time, if somebody comes to me for a lesson and they go practice, they've either forgotten what I've told them or they have never been able to feel what I've told them, so they're struggling the whole lesson. I had a guy on the robot about 3 weeks ago, first lesson, two-hour lesson. He's about a 9 handicap. He fades the ball, and when it goes south, he slices it like 99% of the people in the world. And he went and hit balls, first bucket of balls, 2 days later. He called me. He was so excited. He faded two balls. Two balls went to the right. He started hooking every other ball. I can't make anybody do that. I mean, I might get a person to hook a couple balls. He's hitting it right to left now. He's won a tournament. He's come back two more times and gotten on the robot. He can't get enough of it. He says, Jeff, I'm on fire. I can do whatever I want with the ball now because I've made him feel the perfect golf swing. And when you get on the robot, it's 100% of the time. You feel the perfect swing over and over and over again. So you put in perfect muscle memory versus go out and beat balls with, you know, 1% good muscle memory, 99% bad muscle memory. So now we have something that can help anybody from a beginner to a tour player. And we've had plenty of tour players that have been on this robot, and every one of them has just said, wow, this is the perfect golf swing. This is what you feel, and it's amazing.
Right, and the reason why, you know, I wanted to sort of let you run with that is I think technology is great. Obviously, it has to be used properly. It has to be used by qualified instructors that understand that. And this is where, you know, technology can help the game. The one thing that I will say that has happened in the past with technology is I think you still have to have good instructors there that understand what is being done and how things are being done so that people understand what it is they're feeling and what they're doing.
Absolutely.
You know, again, technology, doesn't matter what it is great and is a great asset. I think one of the dangers that I've seen in this industry over the years, and you know, again, not any, you know, directed to any one product, is that sometimes the instructors will rely too much on the product and not enough of their own ability. And I think that it has to be sort of almost like a marriage. It has to be a marriage of both. It has to be there to be able to handle it properly and make sure that they understand the equipment properly, but also to be able to articulate what that person's going to experience when they're using that product, such as the RoboGolf Pro.
Absolutely.
Great point, Jeff. I love it.
Thank you.
Love it. We're going to go on to another question here, guys, and I'm going to start off with Scott on this. Let me just read first. Larry from Newport, Rhode Island. Very simple question, but one I've heard many, many times, and I'm sure you've heard over the years since hybrids have come on the market. He says, I struggle hitting my hybrids. And his question is very simple. He says, do I play it like a regular wood or where I sweep it more or hit up on it like I would my driver, or do I hit it more like an iron where I'm taking a little bit of a divot hitting down? Scott, if you want to lead off on that one, Larry from Newport, Rhode Island, wants to know how he needs to best utilize his hybrids.
Yeah, it's a really good question with the advent of hybrids over the last few years, and definitely we don't want to be hitting up on it like a driver, and hybrids should be played more like your irons, more like your mid-irons, you know, ball just slightly in front of center of your stance and hitting down on it slightly. And, you know, the lower center of gravity and the way those hybrids are designed, it's going to get the ball up in the air for you. And, you know, it replaces the long irons where everybody struggled for such a long time.
Right, and good point. Stan, I want to go to you for a second here. What's some of the common errors that you've seen, you know, whether it be on the course or in a session where somebody's using the hybrid? What are some of the common things that you've seen people do with the hybrid and not get the results they should be? What are some of the mistakes they're making?
Well, just the opposite of what Scott said. I think most people want to hit it more like a wood driver is to swing up on it.
Right.
And you need to hit down on the ball with a hybrid. I think the key to the hybrid is getting the right angle of approach. You don't want to get it too shallow. You don't want to get it too steep. You got to find the happy medium there. But we are hitting down on the golf ball. So To me, the common mistake is to try to hit up on it and to lift it. And to be honest with you, Ted, I think that's the whole problem with everybody in their golf swing. Most of the golfers out there, recreational golfers, are trying to swing up and help the ball go up.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. With whatever club they've got in the bag, that's a very common
right.
thing. Let me ask you this from a little bit different. As far as ball position, where should they be playing to sort of avoid that? Should it be further back in the stance? Should it be further up or somewhere in the middle? Where should they be? Where should Larry here in Newport be playing that ball when using his hybrid clubs?
Well, I use pretty much a standard ball position, and basically from there it's just moving of the right foot back and forth to change the body position. But the ball position pretty much stays in the same spot in relationship to the left foot.
Okay.
And for me, that's generally two balls, and that's generally two balls inside the left foot. And then from there, we're
okay.
going to be widening and opening the right foot to lengthen or shorten the shot. If anything, maybe air towards the back a little bit.
Okay, very good. And Larry, any additional thoughts that you want to add Jeff, for Larry. I'm reading the wrong one.
I can go
one
by
here.
Larry.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at the screen here and reading the
you
names.
You can call
I
me
apologize.
Larry.
All right, for purposes of this, Larry, anything you want to add differently or in addition to the other gentleman?
No, I like the three-ball theory. You know, one ball inside your foot for your woods, two balls for your long irons and hybrids, and three balls for your short irons. I mean, that can vary with different people, but I see most of the problem with people, they get a hybrid in their hand, and instead of allowing the club to do the work for them, which is designed to do, they still try to help it. So
mm-hmm.
I don't believe
mm-hmm.
the problem is the hybrid. I believe the problem is what most people do, and they try to lift the ball up in the air. They try to scoop at it. And it doesn't matter if they have a hybrid or what kind of club. It's not going to work if they're approaching it that way. So they've got to learn
right.
first to drive through the ball, have a long flat spot through the ball for the ball to go up with the use of the club.
Right. And something else, too, that I think really a lot of people need to factor in is also width of stance. And you know, a lot of players I see on the practice tees will have a very wide stance, much like they would for their driver with a hybrid. And that, of course, is going to affect it. It's certainly you want to have a sweeping action, as you said, but you want to have some downward movement. But I think, too, if they're playing with too wide of a stance, it tends to shift the weight back, much like it would hitting a driver, and you get that same situation where they're, again, going back to hitting up the ball stand, as you had indicated, which most people do with a lot of their clubs. I mean, I've seen people that I could fit a yardstick in between their feet. That's how wide they're standing, and it's no wonder they're not hitting anything. So I think that, you know, in order to get that consistency, I think, you know, the average person out there, and Larry, you know, if you're listening here, you know, you need to be consistent with that as well, because if you're going to have a ball position, whether it be one, two, or three position, depending on what club you're playing, if you're varying your stance for the same shot all the time, one time you're narrow and the next time you're wide, you know, you're not going to be a consistent player. So you need to, this is where some good instruction will help get you into a proper pattern for you to be able to hit those shots. And as far as your hybrids, I think what the gentleman all said here, I think is a great way to look at it, is you're not hitting it like a driver where you're sweeping up, you're really sweeping through, but there is some downward motion as well, much like you would your middle irons, and you need to play it further back in your stance, unlike you would for your driver. So great points, guys. I appreciate you chiming in on that. And we're going to round out here with a final question, and then I'm going to give you guys an opportunity before we close off this Coach's Corner segment, to just remind everybody how they can get a hold of you and where you're located and that sort of thing. So, and I'm going to do this in order that I started. And Stan, I'm going to start with you on this question, and then we'll go to Scott, and then Jeff, I'll let you finish out at the end.
Okay.
This one's from Oscar, in Florida. He doesn't say where. But he indicates he's someone who loves the game, but my work schedule doesn't allow me to play as much as I would like. I try to get out every week, if not to play, at least practice. Because my schedule is sometimes hectic, when I do get out, I feel like I'm starting from scratch all the time. Do you have any suggestions on how I can try to maintain some kind of a game given my schedule? So here's an interesting thing. You know, Oscar, obviously, he has a very hectic work schedule. And the reason why I wanted to throw this one in, I know it's very similar to some of the other ones as far as practicing and things like that, but I read on the program probably about 3 weeks ago, I guess it was, I did a segment where I talked about the industry as a whole, that the rounds of golf being played is actually on the decrease because of people's work schedule and time. And since 2006, it's actually decreased by an average of 4.5% to 5% a year in the number of rounds played. And part of the number one reason that's being given is not a cost issue, but rather a time issue. So here's a perfect example. Oscar down in Florida, or here in Florida, excuse me, is somebody that wants to play, but his work schedule does not. So, Stan, how can we help Oscar here to get the most out of his time that he is playing and practicing? What can we do to get him to get the most out of his time?
All right, beautiful question. One of the best venues he will ever have for practice is at his house. He can do it in his pajamas. It will cost him no gas. It will cost him no balls to purchase. All he needs to do is find an area, pick up a golf club, and make 100 golf swings every single day, over and over. Practice slowly, back and forth, swinging from address to hip high, back to impact to hip high. Do that over and over. Work on your grip. Just indoor practice without a golf ball is one of the best practices that gentleman will ever have, and he'll never have to leave his house. If he's traveling, he has no golf clubs, take a washcloth, put it in your hand. It'll give your arms leverage. You can still make a golf swing and practice your golf swing. So that's my recommendation for him.
Very good points. And let me just add to that, Oscar, if you're doing that at home and in your pajamas, just make sure you're not doing it in the bedroom. I don't want you to hit your wife in the head with the golf club and end up not getting to play at all because you're incarcerated. But anyways, Scott, if you want to add to that, anything that you can suggest that we can get Oscar playing better and the limited time that he has.
Yeah, I think Stan hit it, you know, right on the head again. If he's got a mirror at home, a lot of my students don't have the room or the time, so I've got them with either a regular grip or a molded grip on a junior club, a little 24-inch club, where they can get in front of a mirror and work on their takeaway or work on their full swing. And because the club is so short, they don't necessarily have to worry about hitting the chandelier in the living room, and they're not necessarily hitting balls, but some of the best practice can be had in front of a mirror. You can work on your posture, even without a club. You can get in front of that mirror and work on your posture. There's a great product on the market called the Golf Gym that you can actually work on your swing and actually build some muscle strength, and you can work just about every position in your golf swing doing it. So there are a number of tools that are out there. You don't have to have a club. If you find yourself in a hotel, again, the washcloth is a fantastic idea. Again, get in front of that mirror and work on your posture, work on your turn. There's a million ways you can practice without necessarily hitting balls or being at the course.
Very well said, and some great points as well. And Jeff, let me just I'm going to kind of, as I've said before in the program, I'm going to kind of throw you under the bus a little bit. Let's take it out of the home for a second, and assume that Oscar's at the course or at the practice range. And let's give him the biggest bang for his buck on how to keep his game in good shape on limited time. What are some things that he can do?
Well, I have to say it again, RoboGolf Pro. You spend an hour on the robot practicing the perfect golf swing, you might not have to hit balls for a week. You might not need to hit balls at all. I hardly hit balls at all. I just get on the robot. I hit a few balls in front of the simulator and see what it's doing and get back on the robot so I can feel that perfect swing over and over and over again. It is the best tool for someone who has no time. And with today's world, with the way we're being pulled here and there, I have so many students that say, Jeff, I don't have time to go beat balls and practice four times a week. But, you know, that's what it takes to make any kind of change. You've got to put in a lot of balls out on the range. And, again, you're not practicing perfect. But if you were to have a tool that allows you to practice perfect, wow, wouldn't you want to get on that as much as possible?
Yep.
And, boy, that's it. You get on Robo Golf Pro, and we can make slight adjustments at 9 different points in the swing. We can move the hand 6 different ways. We can move the club 4 different ways. So the combination of building a swing for somebody or building a fault fix for them, if they're taking it inside and crossing the line, I can make them take it outside and lay it off. That's what appealed me to why the robot appealed to me so much is because I've always taught in opposites. And when somebody's doing something,
right,
I make them go 180 degrees the other direction. Well, this makes you do it unless you let go, which most people, you know, pretty much everybody doesn't let go. So practice perfect instead of practice being frustrated. And that's the robot.
Right. Great way to end the segment. And, you know, let me just add this again. You know, I think it all comes down to really expectations. Obviously, Oscar has a busy work schedule, as we all do, and has limited time, and there's a lot of great avenues to take, and it has to be sort of really said here, excuse me, tonight, is number one, you certainly have to practice with a purpose when you do have the opportunity to get out and work on your game.
Right.
I would say that's first and foremost. You certainly want to a great teach professional in your area, and have them put together a game plan, if you will. Tell them what it is that you want to get out of your game. If you just want to be that sort of weekend warrior that just wants to go out and have some fun, you don't really care about, making it out on the PGA Tour, then obviously, you know, you don't have to cater to that avenue. But if you want to improve, there's a lot of guys out there, and there's a lot of great instructors out there that you can, get associated with. But practice with purpose, number one. Get connected with somebody that can help you with your game. But the biggest thing that I would say, that no matter who you go to or where you go to, is you have to put that practice to what you've got to be able to, no matter what product or what instructor you're connected with. If you're not going to put the time and effort in, as was mentioned in the program, you're not going to learn the game properly. You're not going to be able to utilize the skill set that's being taught to you to its fullest potential. And, of course, you're going to end up being frustrated. And so I would say in closing to all of the respondents that sent their email is, if you'd leave that, and certainly get connected with instructors that have access to some great technology out there. There's a myriad of technology like the Robo Golf Pro. Certainly do that, but number one, sit down with your local teach professional and have them help quality plan for you. Guys, I want to thank you for coming on the Coach's Corner panel, and as promised, I want to give you an opportunity to just let the listeners know where they can get a hold of you in your respective areas. So, Stan, I'm going to guest, I want you to start off first and just let the listeners here know where they can get in touch with you.
Yeah, you can get in touch with me at BocaRetonGolfLesson.com or Don Law Golf Academy, located in Boca Raton, Florida. I'm at 561-699-2616. And I work at two different courses down here, Osprey Point Golf Course and Ocean Breeze Golf Club.
Very good, Stan. I want to thank you for coming on the program again. I appreciate it. And Scott, if you want to just take a moment and let again, thanks, Stan. I appreciate it. Scott, if you want to take a moment as well and just let the listening audience here know how they can get in touch with you if they want to connect with you, go ahead.
Thanks, Ted, and I appreciate the opportunity, and thanks for having me on. I can be reached if you're in the Detroit area or just outside the Detroit area at thesimpleworldofgolf.com. And I can also be reached through my nonprofit foundation if you happen to be a disabled golfer or a wounded veteran at norestrictionsgolf.org. And I teach out of two facilities up here, Play Golf 365, which is in West Bloomfield, and then at the range at Shenandoah Country Club. I also have a facility out in Troy that's called Balance Your Fitness, and I can be located at any of the three locations.
Fantastic. And, of course, last but not least, Larry, I mean Jeff, sorry, I had to throw that in there. Jeff Shaw, if you want to let the listeners know how they can get in touch with you.
Absolutely. Start off with my cell phone, 206-612-3048, and you can email me at jeffshaw@tourboundgolfacademy.com, or you can go to tourboundgolfacademy.com or robogolfpro.com for more information. And we've got robots in Seattle. Scott Nye is in Pebble at the Pebble Beach Golf Academy. Scott Nye, N-E-I, at Robo or at tourboundgolfacademy.com. We've got one at Del Mar Golf Club. There's one in Chicago at Tourbound Golf Academy, and there's one in Canada.
Where's the one in Canada? I forget now.
I was just trying to find that out, and I haven't heard back of the I know the course, and it has slipped my mind.
I seem to want to think it's around Mississauga or is it Toronto area? I'm not sure.
It's in
I know
Toronto.
Where
Tiger's okay. coach teaches there.
Oh, yeah, Sean. Okay. Yeah. I can't think of it off the top of my head, but I know where you mean. Excellent. I knew there was one up in Canada. I just couldn't remember where
yep.
it was off the top of my head. But Stan and Scott and Jeff, I want to thank you very much for participating tonight in Coach's Corner. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
And as always,
you
guys are welcome to come back anytime. And the panel, I appreciate it. I know the audience loves it, and they keep sending in their questions, and I know that they're getting help out there from you guys, and I appreciate it very much. And much continued success in all of your endeavors, and I look forward to having you back Talk Live.
Thanks a lot, Deb.
All right, you guys have a great evening. We'll talk to you soon. And don't forget, Scott, I know you're going to be coming back on and talking about some of the great things that you're doing with your foundation.
I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to that conversation. Thanks.
All right. And Jeff as well, I would love to have you come back on for a separate interview anytime you want to come on.
Thanks very much.
Not a problem. Have a great evening, guys.
You too.
Thanks, Todd.
All right. Okay, winding up another Coach's Corner segment, and I want to thank again my special panel. Stan Moore, teacher professional, works with the Don Law Golf Academy in Boca Raton, Florida, and you can get in touch with Stan through his website at www.bocaratongolflesson.com. And, of course, Scott Millman, master teacher professional and owner of president of the Simple World of Golf, and he's also co-owner and founder at the Millman NRG Foundation, which helps some of the wounded veterans and disabled as well take up and play this great game of golf. So make sure that you check him out at both of his websites at www.thesimpleworldofgolf.com. And for his foundation, you can check out as well at www.norestrictionsgolf.org. Make sure you check them out. And last, of course, but not least, Jeff Shaw, thanks for pitching in and filling in for Scott tonight. And you can reach him through the various channels that he had indicated, but also you can follow on tourboundgolfacademy.com. And he's also a senior instructor at Aimpoint as well as a PGA feature professional. Thanks, Jeff, for filling in. And just going to take a moment here while I wait for our next my guest interviewer tonight calls in, and we'll get started. But let me just tell you a little bit about Jeff Passage. Jeff actually reached out to me, and it's kind of an interesting, and some of you, if you've read the notes for the program tonight, Jeff, of course, is a CPA, which is a certified public accountant, and you're probably thinking, well, why have an accountant on a golf program? Well, very simply, and Jeff's going to talk about that a little bit more when he gets on, but let me just tell you a little bit about Jeff first. Jeff's hometown, is Carmel, Indiana. Of course, he currently lives in Noblesville, Indiana. He attended Ball State University up in Indiana and has a bachelor's degree in accounting back in 78. He also attended Baptist Bible College in Springfield, Missouri, and studied in the systematic theology. Didn't go to ministry that out, but he did study the theology. He also went and did some MBA studies as well at Butler University over in Indianapolis, Indiana, and has quite a few different talents and skills, music being one of them, of course, business, accounting, tax, and business consulting, and also did a little broadcasting, public address, and radio TV work as well. And as far as his golf, he's currently finding his niche with golf, and as a CPA teacher, golf swing analyst, is looking to find his niche there, and also golf facility management, sales, marketing volunteer. His background, of course, he grew up in a small town, Carmel, Indiana, as I indicated, played a lot of different sports, everything from football, baseball, and basketball as a youth. And he indicates, and these are not very good at any of them, but nevertheless, he gave it his best. And back in probably 1967, he indicates here that his dad took him to a municipal golf course, which I can say I did the same thing, and was sort of introduced to the game, and he's certainly enjoyed playing golf throughout his junior high and high school, but was never able to break 100, but always thought that if he had enough time and money, as we all have, thought from time to time that he would give it a really good go and become a great golfer. He's really developed really two great skills, music and math, and music was his creative side, and math, of course, was, as he puts it, his geeky side, and apparently they coexisted quite well. He's become a very accomplished pianist and excelled in math, which translated into becoming a numbers person, which, of course, is a CPA. And he really wants to handle the golf industry and really wants to help. And I want to bring him out here now. We're going to talk a little bit about that. So without any further ado, let me bring on my guest this evening. This is Golf Talk Live. How are you?
Hi, Ted. How are you?
Well, I'm doing fantastic. How are you, sir?
Doing great.
You ready to go?
I am. Let's do it.
All right. I've already introduced you to the audience. So, Jeff, you, as I was just explaining to the audience here, you had reached out to me a little while ago and indicated a desire of really sort of into the golf industry, and you really are coming at it from a unique perspective as a CPA, accountant. You want to do some things to really help a lot of people in the golf industry. And one of the things that you want to do is really to put sort of a staple of golf pros as tax and accounting clients and club pros, everything from club pros, teaching pros, and, of course, tour players. Why is it important? I mean, obviously, we all have to do taxes, and it's great to have somebody. But let me try this from a different angle, if you will, as opposed to the typical of having an accountant, because we all have accountants that we use. Why is it important, particularly for a professional athlete? Let's start with the tour players, for them to have somebody of your caliber in their camp, if you will. What are some things?
Well, I think
that
the big thing is. Sure. I think the big thing is that they have unique sources of revenue and also unique expenditures. So let's look at a golf pro. Just like, this week they're playing in South Carolina. Last week they played in Georgia. A couple of weeks ago they might have played in Florida. Another week they played in California. So you have revenue sources in different states, even different countries. All of those states and countries have different tax laws and things like that. And so, especially for the young golfer, he might go out to California and play in a tournament, win $20,000, comes home, says, man, I won $20,000. Well, not necessarily. After tax, it may translate to maybe only $10,000 or $12,000, and then you got your expenses on top of that. So, and you've got to keep track of those things. And that's what I want to do. I want to be there for those golf pros, especially tour players and their caddies, and say, okay, here's what you won, here's your expenses, here you are after tax. And they go, that little? And actually, well, I did see that I think after tax, the PGA golf pro nets about 43% of earnings.
Right, wow.
Which is not very good.
No. Well, and here's one of the things, and I think a lot of people now, you don't see it quite as much in this day and age, but back in the day with players and Trevino's come out publicly and talked about this, years ago. I think a lot of the younger players coming up are certainly a little more, I don't want to say necessarily business savvy, but a little bit more educated and sort of surrounded themselves with some good people. But I know back in the days with players such as Trevino and that, a lot of them that didn't have you know, that sort of business savvy relied heavily on you know, somebody else handling it. And I think that some of them, and I know Trevino, you know, lost a lot. You know, he was basically fleeced at one point. So I think that, you know, you have to make sure that you surround yourself. It's great. You've got a great caddy there to help you on the golf course, but you need somebody especially that specializes in what you do to help them off the course as well. Because as you said, you know, you're traveling around, especially with a lot of the tour pros, and you need to be able to be well advised and make sure that you understand because and I'm going to throw this in the form of a question. What are some of the common things that you're seeing, you know, as an accountant, that you see common mistakes that a lot of people that in this position might be making?
One of the things I see is just some don't realize that they've actually earned the income. They say, well, you know, well, somebody gave me $1,000. Well, you know, it's probably, you know, in a business setting, that was probably business revenue, not just a gift. And so you have to report that as income. Another thing that that some people do is I've seen this a lot with golf pros who maybe they have a client who's a restaurant owner. And so instead of paying the golf pro $100 for a lesson, he says, come and eat at my restaurant, no charge. Well, you've actually bartered, and that $100 is really income, and that, you know, to the golf pro, and then the meal at the restaurant isn't necessarily a business meal. It's more likely is going to be considered by the IRS a personal meal. So not only have you not gotten the cash for the lesson, you also don't have the deduction for the meal, and those are some of those things. So bartering, if you account for it correctly, it's okay, but if you are not accounting for it properly, then you can get yourself in trouble, and the IRS does look at those kinds of things.
Right, and really, you know, I mean, again, you know, the tour players are at a caliber where they can afford to have not just, you know, a great a group of accountants or an accountant nearby, but they've also got business managers and that. Their sole function as a tour player is to go out there and play some good golf and generate the revenue and so forth. But it's people behind the scenes that, and I think that probably, and I'm sure you, with this, that probably one of the biggest mistakes, and this applies for really any business, but, you know, we're going to stick with the golf business here, is that a lot of these people don't set themselves up properly right from the get-go. What are some things that let's say we've got John over here who wants to get out on the tour. He's earned his tour card. What are some first steps that John needs to do to prepare himself for going out on tour from your standpoint?
Well, one of the things that he needs to consider, and I am here not giving legal advice, but as an accountant, I understand something about business formations. And one of the things that he'll need to probably do is form a personal corporation for himself. You know, call it Jeff Passage Incorporated, you know, pro golfer, something like that, to where the revenue gets put into a corporation. It creates a limited liability for him versus being a sole proprietorship and things like that. So there are different types of business formations. You can be a an LLC, limited liability company. You could be a C corporation. You could be an S corporation. In certain instances, especially like maybe with golf courses and things, you could actually have a golf course put in a trust and generate revenue from that. So, but for the golfer, for the tour pro, the club pro, things like that, they really need to understand how they want to form their business to give them the best overall tax advantages. And there are pros and cons to each type of business formation, and you cannot just say, oh, this is the best all the time. It all depends on the person and their desires and things like that.
Well, and it can also change as their level changes. Obviously, you know, first coming into the game, they might be able to you know, from a cost standpoint, they might be able to do it one way, but as their careers progress, obviously they have to be a little more aggressive in how they handle their business affairs. You know, so they may have to make modifications. And this is where and here's really in a nutshell why I wanted to have you on the program. And again, you know, you're not what I would call my traditional guest on here, but you intrigued me when you had reached out on the program, because I think it's important. Obviously, you know, we're talking about the tour players, and as I said, that they're usually by the time they're getting out of the PGA Tour, they've surrounded themselves with their own entourage, if you will. But let's you know, change it a little bit and talk about some of the club pros or some of the golf facilities out there. What are some common mistakes that you're seeing them do, and what are some things that they're not doing?
Well, I think on the golf club side, some of the things what people tend to do is they will just aggregate all their business operations into one entity. So you have the golf course itself, you have the pro shop, you have the restaurant, you have the driving range, and things like that. And they'll just aggregate all those kinds of operations and then just file one tax return. It may actually be advantageous to actually separate those operations and have the golf course under some kind of real estate entity, and then have the driving range as a separate entity, and you can create different ownership groups for each of those things. So you can have an ownership group with the golf course, an ownership group with the driving range, something with the pro shop, or even the snack bar, and things like that, because then you can structure the entities that would be the most profitable for each of those groups of people, and things like that. Because the guy who owns the golf course itself may not care about the restaurant, and he may not want to be in restaurant operations, so he lets somebody else manage the restaurant. Same with somebody separate managing the pro shop and all the merchandise there and things like that. And that way you separate the liability issues, and you separate the revenue sources into what will make money for each group and things like that. It just depends on not only the people involved, but actually even the states where you're involved. Because some states may not have an income tax, but they have a heavy property tax. Well, if you own the land, you're going to get taxed pretty heavily on the land, whereas you may not get taxed very much, if at all, on the other operations and things like that. So you have to look at all those little nooks and crannies of taxation and where you're being taxed and how you're being taxed and on what you're being taxed and things like that. So that's where I would come into play in that regard. The other side is just personally, you know, a golf pro himself. What does the golf pro want? You know, where does the golf pro make his money? Well, he makes it usually by teaching or managing others who do teach. Then he's going to manage probably the pro shop and keep track of all the inventory and things like that. And so the question is, you know, the golf pro doesn't want to handle the paperwork. He doesn't want to handle the deposits. You know, he probably wants somebody in the back office handling those kinds of numbers things. And then at the end of the year, you give him his P&L, and he says, "Oh, that's what I made." And usually with a disappointed look on his face, he says, "I worked. You know, I gave it, you know, 2,000 lessons this year. This is all I have to show for it."
Yeah, and that's when the heart attacks happen and so forth, when you realize how much you've actually earned as opposed to how much you've actually had to pay out in taxes. And you raise a valid point, and the reason, you know, the other reason, too, is, you know, I have an older brother who's a CA back home in Canada, and I know when I started my various business ventures and stuff, he was always very good at pointing out to me, you know, how I needed to structure myself and so forth. And, you know, he made a point and said, remember, you can't just go and start writing everything off. And I think that one of the problems, you raised a very valid point, and I just want to sort of reiterate a little bit. You know, you talked about going back to the club pros for a second here and the courses and so forth. If you've got a restaurant, a range, and so forth. You know, one of the other things, too, about not wanting to form under one entity is again, if you have an area in a facility such as the restaurant, we'll use that as the easiest example, that's not, let's say, up to snuff and not earning what it needs to be earning, you know, you don't want to have it all coming through the same, funneling into the same corporation or LLC or what have you. You want it to keep it separate so that if you need to make changes, it's a lot easier to, you know, for lack of better words, cut it loose and you know, focus somewhere else. And not have to sort of break up this happy marriage and have to, you know, reform a new corporation or something to that effect. And you can certainly close the restaurant down, but then it creates other, you know, implications and things as well. So this is where, you know, somebody such as yourself, Jeff, is great to be there from day one and help set these people up. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that you indicate here you want to really do is you really want to you're not just somebody that prepares the tax returns and things like that. You're somebody that also consults with the golf club owners. You want to consult with them ahead of time, managers on how to set up their operation, but also how to manage it properly, because it's not just a matter of, you know, just because they're in the golf business that they understand all the business side as well. Some of them have certainly been trained, but you can't do everything. So this is where you need to rely on somebody. And that's, you know, why I wanted to, again, have you on the program, because I think you provide a valuable service to people in the golf profession. And I know that you want to aggressively market that. And you know, I know you can't give away everything here, obviously you want to talk to people more in one-on-one. But you know, if you were sitting down with a golf club manager and or owner, what are some things that you want to take a look at, and what are some things that you want to explain to them?
Well, I think the first thing I want to do is just say, how are you earning your money? What are the sources of revenue? Is it by lessons? Is it selling product? Is it, you know, club fitting, club making? I want to know those sources of revenue, because sometimes, you know, you may be just spending way, way too much time on the club fitting and not really making much money. It might attract a little bit of more, you know, product sales. It might attract an extra lesson or two, but it may not be really self-sustaining. So you may not want to do that as a club pro, or you may want to just let somebody else come in and freelance and say, here, you can be my club fitter, and whatever you make, you keep, and things like that. Same with, you know, looking at the revenue on the lessons. Are they priced appropriately for the market? In my area, I can go anywhere, and the lessons would be anywhere from $50 an hour at some courses to $150 an hour. And I don't know if the quality of pro at $150 an hour is really three times the quality of the guy at $50 an hour. I don't know. But they apparently say, well, the market will bear $150 an hour, and so that's what they charge. But if they're not, you know, generating enough lessons, why are they not? Is it the fee? Is it the staff? You know, who you have on staff? Maybe they're great technicians, but they're not very good communicators. Or the other way around, maybe they do a lot of communicating, but not really showing you how and why you've got a swing fault and things like that. So there's got to be a good mix in there. And so, you know, a club pro is going to know pretty much, compared with his peers, what he needs to generate in lessons fees for a year. And if he's not generating that, he needs to determine why not. And, you know, sometimes I can help them a little bit to understand maybe their age mix. Maybe they've got a lot of juniors, and so they don't charge as much for the juniors. And maybe they've got a lot of seniors. Maybe they don't charge a lot for seniors. In that middle group, the core group of your golf club, they're not taking lessons, maybe because they don't think they need them. You know,
Right.
And so maybe you can tie some packages in and things like that to attract more lessons and things like that.
Now, Jeff, are you also going to be there to help them put together their budget as well? And you know, initially, and I'm not talking obviously necessarily every year, but as especially with a new course or facility that's opening up, whether it be a range, are you going to be there to help guide them? Because I think one of the problems too with most businesses, I think, especially for you know, somebody that's sort of just up and coming, and again, I'm sticking with courses and or that type of facility, that you know, that they might have business experience in one area, but their expectations may not be realistic for the market. So, you know, is it prudent maybe to have some good advice, you know, from an accountant, let's say, and say, okay, let's put together the budget. What do you anticipate your budget as far as expenditures and what your anticipated revenues are going to be for the year? And let's, you know, before you go out and start spending money on advertising and doing all kinds of things and you know, blowing your budget, let's say, let's realistically look at what's, you know, in the area. Like, as you said, is there a lot of juniors in the area, and do sort of a cost analysis that way. Mm-hmm. Is that something as well that you're going to provide in your service with your customers?
Absolutely. I think what I find with a lot of business owners, they're just way too optimistic about their profit potential. And a lot of that has to do with they want to be able to present a good package to their bank for lending purposes. And so they really throw out these real optimistic numbers and say, look, you know, we can generate 20% on, you know, bottom line and things like that, and maybe it's only 5%. And
right.
The banks are savvy enough to say, I don't think 20% return is quite realistic, and go back to the drawing board and things like that. So, and you don't want to be embarrassed by a bank, and things like that. You want to present a very, very clear and concise picture. And a lot of times, banks will ask a golf owner or any business owner, have a CPA look at your budget, your forecast. Even have them compile your financial statements for the last couple of years. We really want somebody to look at your numbers, things like that.
Right.
So, yeah, a new startup company, always way too optimistic. It's okay to have a dream, but when it comes down to the numbers and what you're trying to accomplish, it's always best to just back it down a little bit and say, okay, my revenue is not necessarily going to be this high the first couple of years. My expenses are probably going to be higher than I think, because just things, there's always things that come up that you need to spend money on. And so that's where I come in. I don't try to be Debbie Downer, but I do try to make them see a clearer picture and say, that's probably a little too optimistic. Let's look at it a little differently. And every market's different.
You're not right, and you're not trying to burst any, you know, anybody's bubble, so to speak, to, you know, knock the wind out of their sail. But at the same time, the service that you're providing and you're proposing here tonight to help, especially in the golf industry, you know, I use this as an example. And I've talked about this earlier in the program about, you know, the number of rounds of golf per year has decreased nearly 5% every year since 2006. And it's not all based on the recession. I mean, certainly the recession has affected it. But a lot of courses have closed their doors or are struggling right now. And I think, you know, they're going to have to be more realistic in how they're changing. And I think, unfortunately, some of them have gotten into an area where they've, and I call it sort of the slash and burn, where they're just discounting so much that they're just not able to generate enough revenue. And I think this is where they're struggling. And that doesn't mean that you can't offer some incentives to get people to come out, but you also have to understand why people are not coming out. Is it because you're overpriced or not, you know, have a proper price point in the market? Or is it, you know, another reason? So you need to assess that first. You need to understand that and look at the value. And you need to get together with somebody such as yourself, Jeff, and look at, you know, let's say when we're preparing this year's budget, are there areas that we can be cutting back in that are just, you know, as an example, you know, we talked about earlier, not a lot of people are spending as much time on the practice range. You know, is the revenue coming in on the practice range? Is it viable to keep that range open to the extent that we do? do we cut back there and make it, you know, certainly available, but maybe not for the length of time of day? And do we need to have those big, you know, floodlights out there every night when there's three people on the range? You know what I mean? So there's a lot of areas that courses need to, and this is why, you know, on the program here, this is something that I want to address. I don't want to just, you know, every week have just the pros on and talking about golf, and, and obviously that's what we want to talk about, but I also want to start tackling some of the business areas of golf, because there is an area that has really, in golf, that has suffered over the last few years particularly, and I think that it's time that the industry starts taking a hard look at itself and making proper changes, and here's one of the ways they can do it is consulting with somebody such as yourself. So, Jeff, let me just pause for a moment here, and I just need to read a few things out just to remind everybody here that we are live on blogtalkradio.com here on Golf Talk Live every Thursday at 6 p.m. Central Standard Time, and we run right through until 8 p.m., of course, when we close off for the night. And I want to thank all of my my coaches that were on earlier in the Coach's Corner panel, Stan Moore, Scott Millman, and, of course, Jeff Shaw. Thanks, guys, for pitching in tonight. And don't forget, you can certainly call live anytime during the live broadcast Thursday evening from 6 to 8. You can call in at area code 646-716-4667, or you can email. If you have questions for the Coach's Corner panel, for future panels, you can send them to questions.golftalklive@gmail.com. Or if you're in the golf profession and want to come on the program, you can email me directly at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com. And don't forget to follow me on Facebook at facebook.com/golftalkliveblog. Make sure you have the blog on the end there, and that'll take you directly to the Facebook site, and certainly throw a few likes my way. I appreciate it. And I got to say again, thank you for all the people that have been following up on Twitter, and I appreciate everybody following me here. And you can get me on my Twitter handle at Ted and Buck CEO. CEO, of course, is in caps. And last but not least, please visit the Golf Talk Live blog website at golftalkliveblog.com and check around. I got some great products there for sale that you can get through some of the guests that have been on the program. And there's some great books that have been on the market as well that you can certainly get through the direct links there and go and purchase through Amazon.com and various websites. So make sure you visit the website as well. And we're here, of course, with the CPA extraordinaire, Mr. Jeff Passage. He's here talking a little bit about how to set up your business correctly and how he can help you. And we're going to have a little bit of fun before we close off here in just a minute, but let's get back down to business here, and no pun intended, but brass taxes. You know, a lot of I had to throw that in there. That's coming from my brother, I'm sure. And Jeff, certainly before we go on, I want to give you an opportunity to let the listeners know where they can get a hold of you. So we'll make sure we read out that contact information a little bit later on here. But let's just sort of wrap up the tax segment here, if we can, just for a second, and then we'll have a little bit of fun. I know some things that some areas that you want to focus on as far as what you want to do is personal goals and things like that with related to the golf industry. If somebody is in a situation, we were just talking a moment ago about maybe some facilities that are struggling. Number one, let's sort of put together a point here, if we will. What's the first thing that you want to do to them? You want to get in touch with them, obviously, and connect with them if you're not currently working with them. And what are some things that you want to do? You want to sit down and then go from there. What do you want to do to help some of these facilities and or individuals that are maybe in a bit of a bind right now? What's the best thing to do?
I think the best thing to do is just kind of look at their, number one, look at their cash situation. Long ago, a mentor of mine said people don't go out of business because they lose money. They go out of business because they run out of cash. So I'd like to know how their cash is holding up. And then if they have debt on the books, find out how much longer they could pay the debt, because that gives me an idea of how much time do we have to negotiate with the bank for an extension, you know, rearrangement, things like that. So that it'll make it easier to keep the course open or the business open and things like that. So so that, you know, those are some of those initial things. I generally will do what I can to avoid filing bankruptcy unless it's absolutely necessary. just right. because it just gets messy. And in the end, the account or the attorneys get a lot more money out of it than anybody else does. You know, let's just face it. The attorneys get their – once the attorneys are involved, the bills rack up. And so you want to do what you can to avoid that. But, you know, when we talk about your courses not generating the money and things like that, I've seen statistics about there's a fine line between charging a little bit too much so you have limited play and therefore it keeps your maintenance costs down versus if you discount your fees, you get a lot more play, but then your maintenance costs go up. And so,
right.
you know, everybody says, well, what's that optimal price? Well, it really depends on your market and things like that. I think, as far as play, we've got all these, you know, new things coming out about how can we speed up play, you know, why isn't equipment actually producing the longer drives and the longer shots than they promise and things like that. And people maybe, you know, they look at $100 an hour for a lesson with a pro and say, man, that's way too much. I'm not going to pay that. And and so that discourages them from playing in the first place. So I'm not going to say the golf pros are pricing themselves out of the market. They know themselves what they believe they're worth. And same with golf courses. They have an idea what they believe the proper fee is for their course. But at some point in time, if you're not generating the number of rounds per year that you really need, then it is time to assess what you need to do. And sometimes just having the right pro there can make all the difference in the world.
One of the things I apologize for interrupting. One of the things that I wanted to add, and you know, I was down at the PGA show this past January, and saw all kinds of very interesting things. But one of the things that concerns me in the golf industry right now, and I'm certainly not knocking any products or any services and things like that, but there's a lot of equipment coming out in the market that is very costly. It's part of part of the training, some of it's part of the allure to the facility. But one of the dangers I see happening, especially in a market where you're not getting people spending as much time at the driving range and maybe not taking as many lessons, is there a danger with some of these courses and or pros even that are spending a lot of resources to getting the latest and greatest technology out there that's very, at times, very costly, and maybe they're not going to see the return on that investment as they maybe once would. How do you sort of step in and say, you know, guys, it's nice to have, you know, product AYZ or ABC, but I'm looking at your numbers here and, you know, it may not be the best fit for you at this time. How do you step in there without really sort of bursting their bubble? How do you advise them that way?
That was kind of hard because I would almost say that a golf pro is not worth his salt if he doesn't have like a flight scope evaluator,
right.
you know, to track the numbers. Again, being a numbers guy, you know, I love being in a situation where I can actually track my ball speed, swing speed. You know, did I come in to out? You know, did I go out to in? Those kinds of things that I can see visually, and things like that. And a flight scope machine will do that. You've got some other things like a swing bite for a lot less money, but I've heard that maybe that's just a tick off from flight scope or the other types of software and evaluators. So, you know, and I think some of those costs are coming down now. So yeah, I think flight scope or whatever, your track man, at one time maybe it was $20,000, maybe now it's $15,000 to $10,000, something like that. So that sometimes that's a very necessary investment. And, you know, if you're a pro who doesn't have it versus a pro who has it, a lot of times the golfer is going to go to the guy who has the track man or the flight scope. And not to say that the other pro is, you know, not good. It's just, I think people, I think people like the technology. It's not the end-all or be-all, but I think that it's very important that people see something tangible, you know, in what they, in how they evaluate their golf swings and their processes and things like that. So, you know, and there's some golf pros who will not use technology.
Yep.
They say I can evaluate a golfer based just visually, just what I see, what, you know, things like that. So, but I think a lot of golfers will. I'm gonna talk with you as I exit the facility here.
Not a problem.
Okay. So hey, I was in a building there closing up, so I'll sit out here in the hallway. Anyway, so there's you know, those kinds of costs that come up that are necessary. A lot of times the you know, a good training facility that has training aids like Tour Striker or Bender Stick,
yep,
or you know, or some of the Medicus products. Those are I think very necessary types of products. Now those aren't very expensive, so you know you can stock a good supply of left-handed and right-handed training aids and help your golfers and things like that. So. You know, there's a lot of things there that, you know, whether you're the pro or just the student, that you can invest in that doesn't take a lot of money, but it's very valuable.
Right.
In the learning
process.
Right,
exactly. Now, let me, we've just got probably about, I'm guessing here, about 10 minutes left, so I want to give you an opportunity. I know that some other things that you wanted to mention here on, you're looking to become a certified golf instructor, it's something that you want to do, and especially you want to coach the juniors, and also look at maybe doing club fitting and as a club maker as well. Those are things that you're sort of looking to do to get into the golf business. Now, is this something that you're in the works of doing right now?
I am. One of the big things is that as I state a lot of times in social media posts, my desire is to serve and help grow the great game of golf. And however I can do that, if I can do that as an accountant, especially like with a young golf pro that's coming out of college, just turned pro, whether he's going to a club, he's going to teach, or he's going to be on the tour, I'm willing to do their tax returns free for the first 2 years just to help them get started.
Wow.
And to develop a relationship with them, and hopefully it would be a long-lasting relationship. I understand, you know, Phil Mickelson already was KPMG. I'm not going to take Phil away from KPMG. That's impossible. But the young pros, they're not making any money. They need a little bit of help to get started. That's what I want to do. The other side is that on golf operations and things like that, I'm already starting to do some teaching and help some of my friends with their golf swings. Even if I'm not that great a golfer myself, I can go out and help them spot things in their swings and help them. And they go, wow, hey, great, thank you, and things like that. But coming up, starting in May 1st, I am going to become a putting instructor at a local facility and then kind of grow from there. And basically, I'm kind of being given carte blanche on this, and I'm really thankful to the owner of the golf facility. And so basically, he's just saying, if you want to come here and give lessons, you can give lessons. I'll let you keep the money. Whatever you earn, you keep. If you want to use the club fitting equipment that we have at it. There's a place in Dayton, Ohio, where I can actually become a certified club maker, club fitter, and all that kind of stuff. So that's only 2 hours from my house. Not a bad deal, and things like that. But the other thing is, I just see that a lot of young kids, they're into a lot of sports, especially in the area that I'm at. You know, there's youth soccer, there's youth baseball, basketball, you name it. There's a youth sport, but I think that juniors need to be coached, and they need to be encouraged to take up golf because it is a game of a lifetime. You're not going to play football all your life. You're not going to necessarily play basketball all your life. But you can play golf all your life, and I think it's a skill that kids should know how to do. And I want, and the big thing is I want to really encourage girls to take up golf.
Yep.
And because a lot of times women get shut out of golf courses or, you know, things like that because men don't want them there. We know that. And
yep.
There's a stigma about women golfers that they play slow, which is not true, and things like that.
Yep.
And so I'd like to see more women play golf. And one of my pet peeves, I got to tell you one of my pet peeves,
sure.
is this whole thing with forward tees. They're not the women's tees. They're not junior tees. They're forward tees. They have no gender attached to them. And I think men need to get away from this macho thing of, oh, we always got to play the whites or the blues. We got to play from the tips because that's the men's tees. Now, if you're not, you know, if you're not shooting par from those back tees, move forward till you can. And if you think you've lost your manhood by playing forward tees, forget about that. So I just want to, I do want to really encourage playing the forward tees as much as possible because I think it speeds up play, it's a lot more fun, and you can actually shoot par sometimes.
Well, and, you know, Nicholas, that's a great point to make. Nicholas, of course, has been a big proponent of Tee It Forward, which is a program that's been really growing very rapidly through the golf industry, and that's why they've got, you know, some celebrities, known golfers like Jack Nicklaus to talk about it. And you're right in your assessment there, and I agree wholeheartedly. You know, as I've gotten a little bit older, you know, my game is still a good game, but, you know, I have to be realistic and know that, you know, that I may have to start gradually creeping forward, and, you know, I'm not going to get the same distance I did when I was in my 20s at age 30, you know, now that I'm starting in my 50s. So, you know, I have to be make adjustments, and you know, it is very difficult ticket for men, and I want to give my own sort of shameless plug here. You brought up about girls and that, women. Obviously, I've recently launched alongside with LPGA professional Cindy Miller a new program called Women of Golf. We're just doing our third show next Tuesday, and we're going to be very aggressively pursuing that market to try and help bring more women into the game, because I really think that that's something that is going to help the game, and it's been long overdue. So that's something I'm glad that you brought that up. Jeff, I want to give you an opportunity here, just to get down to the last few minutes. I want to give you an opportunity to let the listeners know that particularly the club pros, the team pros, and even if there's some tour pros tuning in tonight, how they can get a hold of you and how you can help them maybe be better prepared for their careers. So if you want to let them know how they can get in touch with you.
Absolutely. My website is taxesgolfandmore.com, and that's A-N-D, not the ampersand, so taxesgolfandmore.com. And my email address is taxesgolfandmore@gmail.com. Phone number is 317-441-5989. And you can see me on Facebook at Jeffrey Passage, or Jeffrey K. Passage. I'm Jeff Passage, CPA, on Twitter, and I also have a Facebook page for Taxes, Golf, and More. So a lot of ways to get a hold of me, and I welcome, you know, any inquiries about my professional services, whether on the accounting side or on the golf side. And also those CAs up in Canada or over in England or something like that who may want an American CPA as a resource for some of their clients who actually play golf in the United States, but they're from another country. I'd be glad to help them, help coordinate the U.S. side of their operations and things like that, and help them with the tax filings and all that. So there's a lot of things I can do. I just have a passion for golf, and that's why I wanted to come up with Taxes, Golf, and More, which is actually my wife, Mary, came up with that name. And it's just my way of serving the golf community more, and also the general public. I have tax clients from all walks of life, and I enjoy serving them. But I wanted to create a niche market within the golf community because it's a sport that I really love, and one of these days I'm going to break 90. I just know that.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to certainly wish you all the best on breaking 90 as well. But, Jeffrey, I want to thank you for coming on Golf Talk Live tonight. And what I'm going to do, Jeffrey, you and I will talk at a later point, but I'm going to get your information up on the Golf Talk Live website that those that are surfing around that are in the golf industry that might be interested in your services, certainly want to make that available, because I think it's a very valuable service in the golf industry. It's not just how to play golf and how to get lessons, but it's also how to manage and coordinate and get the business end side of it working well and properly as well, especially in these difficult economic times that we're all facing here from time to time. So you certainly are offering a valuable service out there to the golf profession, and I want to make sure that we get you out there and help get you some more clients drummed up. But Jeffrey, I want to thank you for coming on Golf Talk Live tonight and sharing a little bit from the business side of golf, and certainly glad to have you here, and I want to wish you much continued success and hope you'll continue to tune into the program.
Well, thank you, Ted. It's a real honor to be on your show, and it certainly will be tuning in week to week to week. I learn as much from these pros as anybody.
Well, I appreciate it, Jeffrey, and again, I want to thank you for coming on the program. And I'm gonna let you go and let you get back and enjoy your family. And as I said, I appreciate you tuning into the program, and I want to thank you for your thoughts and input into the show tonight. And again, anything I can do to help you as much as you're helping me by bringing some great contact to the program, I'm more than happy to help in any way that I can.
Thanks, Ted. Have a good evening.
All right. You take care, and thanks for stopping by Golf Talk Live. I appreciate it.
Sure. My pleasure.
All right. Okay. Just have a moment here or two, and I just want to excuse me. Pardon me. My throat's a little scratchy here. Pardon me. I want to thank, again, all of my guests this evening, starting off with, of course, the Coach's Corner panel. I want to thank Stan Moore, PGA teaching professional down in the Boca Raton, Florida area. Of course, Stan works with the Don Law Golf Academy, and you can get a hold of Stan Moore at BocaRatonGolfLesson.com. Also on the panel was Scott Millman, master teaching professional and the owner and president of the Simple World of Golf, and also the co-owner of and founder at the Millman NRG Foundation, helping those wounded veterans and the disabled enjoy this great game. So make sure you check out, and his websites, of course, are the simpleworldofgolf.com and norestrictionsgolf.org is his foundation website. And I want to thank, of course, certainly last but not least, again, Jeff Shaw, PGA teacher professional, also a senior instructor at Aimpoint, and he is with the Tourbound Golf Academy in Seattle, and the website is www.tourboundgolfacademy.com. And of course, he's, as he mentioned on the program, involved with the Rogo Golf Pro that Scott Nye, who was originally going to be on the program, is the CEO and president of Tourbound Golf, and it's a great product. I saw it when I was down at the PGA show. Didn't get a chance to try it, unfortunately, but I know it's a great product, and I know they're helping a lot of golfers out there find their game. I want to thank, obviously, my special guest who helped wrap out the program, Jeffrey Passage, CPA extraordinaire, for stopping by Golf Talk Live, and Jeffrey is certainly bringing a unique perspective to the business. It doesn't matter who you are or what level you're playing at in this game or what area of the game you're in, we can all use some professional help, and Jeffrey is certainly offering his services out there, especially to some of you young tour players, up-and-comers that want to get out on the tour. Jeffrey is certainly a good person to connect with and get help with your game in order to prepare your business model and so forth. So make sure you connect, and also your teaching pros out there and club pros, Jeffrey as well. And let me give you his information again. That's Jeffrey Passage, And you can reach him at his number at area code 317-441-5989, or you can visit his website at www.taxesgolfandmore.com or email him at taxesgolfandmore@gmail.com. I want to thank you all for tuning in every week here on Golf Talk Live. I want a special thank you to all of my listeners worldwide for stopping by and listening each and every week. I appreciate that very much, more than you know, and the audience keeps continuing to grow each and every week. And don't forget to tune in this coming Tuesday to the Women of Golf program. That's Tuesday at 9 a.m. Eastern time with, of course, I'll be joined by my co-host, LPGA professional Cindy Miller, and we're going to be talking with one of the senior vice presidents, Nancy Henderson of the LPGA Foundation. So you want to make sure that you tune in. And that website link is blogtalkradio.com/womenofgolf. Make sure that you tune in. That's next Tuesday coming up at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I want to thank some supporters and sponsors of this program, Golf Talk Live, Mr. Jonathan Laird at South Coast Golf Guide, Meredith Kirk at Meredith Kirk Golf and the Endless Golf Myrtle Beach magazine, Mr. Bernie Pinder of Ontic Golf, Mr. Peter Doyle of Doyle Golf Solutions over in Ireland. I want to thank you again, my special guest panel tonight, Stan Moore, Scott Millman, and Jeff Shaw. Thanks for stopping by, and of course my special guest, Mr. Jeffrey Passage. Thank you everybody. Have a great weekend, and I will see you back here next Thursday at 6 p.m. Central Time, right here on Golf Talk Live. God bless, and have a great weekend, everybody. Thank you.